welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, we have another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and, oh, whatever might be interesting in the terms of the show, which is facing darkness without fear. Wow. Yeah, that's what I thought we'd talk about today. Actually, this show was kind of encouraged by a conversation I had with a friend of mine who is about 10 years my senior. He's been through a lot of things, and he's had times when darkness could be part of what he had to face. And he's seen other people in similar circumstances. So sometimes when we have a conversation, it turns to issues that we are in at the present time as a world, not just ourselves or personal issues, but much more than that about what's happening throughout the world. Although I can certainly say on my own behalf that there are times these days when I need to face darkness and hopefully without fear. But this is a topic that is not just ours, it isn't mine alone, but it is happening more and more among quite a few people. And in the course of the conversation, he voiced his opinion that he thought we were facing a, we'll call it, leadership darkness circumstance, where the president, President Obama, will not relinquish his office if he were to lose the coming election or think he's going to lose the coming election and impose a state of martial law and suspend elections, etc. Now, whether that's true or not is really not what we're going to discuss tonight, but the point is that at that segue in our conversation, I wanted to know what he would do about that kind of occurrence if it ever took place. And his most favorable, or I should say quick response, was get out of town. Leave the country as quickly as possible. Kind of an interesting thought process, but one that I thought, and although I didn't express it at the time, really comes from fear. In other words, if you're going to run away from something, you're most likely fearful of the results because fear produces an avoidance response. And so that was the response or reaction, I should say, that I had to his comments. Now, let's look at these circumstances from a broader perspective. Obviously, if that occurred, in general terms, we would be looking at a profound act of evil and darkness. This is an interesting point, and he and I did discuss this, that it could be half the people or more might decide that they don't see it as an evil act to suspend the Constitution, ignore the rule of law, and that sort of thing. And here is the greatest fear I have. And let me propose it to all of you out there as we talk about various issues dealing with darkness and fear in today's show, that if you're looking at all of the fears that I can have about existence here on Earth at the present time in the physical world, the greatest fear I would have would be that most people would not have a fear of darkness because they couldn't realize it. In other words, they're blind to evil. And evil does its very best to make itself invisible as much of the time as possible. However, when it can't, it will convince people in the antithesis of that, or the opposite way, that evil's everywhere, so that people will react irrationally when there is no evil, and that's another kind of evil in itself. So this is the concern and fears, if I have any, about life here in the physical world, is that it could be that there are so many people that have an extreme avoidance and fear of darkness that they never realize on a conscious level it exists. Don't see it. They just don't see it in others. Even the most blatant acts and the most destructive possible things that could be done, and it may not trigger it in some people. Now, there's always going to be a few people are like that, I believe. I think that it's going to be a near miracle on Earth, anywhere in the near future, for some people not to have that response. However, it's when you get very large numbers that the whole world becomes in jeopardy of being infiltrated and controlled by evil. And that's my yardstick. In other words, when I look at a system, whatever it might be, political, or this sort of example I gave, but let's say it's any system, any kind of existing interactional group of individuals, people, and other groups interacting, and there's the potential that there may be some darkness or evil in penetrating or part of it. My yardstick, and this is a suggestion here, because it's an opinion, is to measure the amount that evil is not seen to determine the overall danger that the evil imposes or is likely to impose on the system. And so that's one point I'm starting off with in tonight's show. Let me define evil for you so that, well, let me define darkness. Darkness is a lack of God's thought or spirit, and another way of saying is a lack of part of that thought, which is light. So if you don't have the light, which is the part of thought, which is purpose and will and freedom and, we might say, conviction and a lot of other creation and creativeness. If those things are lacking, you have a lack of light. And generally that's followed with a lack of consciousness, which then develops into a lack overall of God's thought. So spirit is composed of those two elements, which is God's thought. And so when there's that missing, then you're in trouble. So even if you just take away one of the components, you split apart God's thought, and therefore God's not part of the equation, and therefore darkness is certainly the road to evil. Evil's a little different, though, because darkness is definable as a matter of how people think, not necessarily how they act, which is kind of strange. I know that sounds strange. We'll deal with that in a few minutes. But it's how they think and what's going on in their minds, as well as how they understand, which is difficult, that which they do and don't think. So they have some understanding of it, and they also have some thought involved. Those come together and can produce darkness when there is either a lack of light or consciousness or both. All right, well, that's not too hard to understand, except it isn't yet evil. Evil has with it a significant third aspect of God's mind, which is it seeks to take actions or interactions which are destructive to life, which by my definition is God's growth, and also simultaneously destructive to, we'll say, the belief in, the thought of, or furtherance of the idea of anything that is spiritual or anything that is of God. So you might say evil's arch enemy is spirit and God, or God's thought and God. So it's attempting to, through various interactions, to destroy God. Now, I know that most evil attempts to convince others that God doesn't exist, which is a whole part of the process. It's a lot easier to destroy something once you convince people it doesn't exist or may not. The doubt of God makes God more susceptible to being destroyed. And, of course, they can't destroy God in the literal sense. They destroy God within the life that is God's growth. God may remain, but if nothing's growing God, as far as they're concerned, they've achieved their goal. And that's what I believe. Again, they might commit the total, the absolute statements that there is no God, so how can I be claiming that they're trying to kill God or destroy God or prevent it from growing by killing wife, etc. Okay, so big difference, in a sense, between darkness, which is really a state of mind. Darkness is a state of mind. And evil, which is a state of mind where actions are taken that become highly destructive to life and to God. Okay, so these, now let's talk about fear. So if you're facing darkness without fear, since darkness is a state of mind, in order to face darkness without fear, you have to have an altered state of mind that changes the propensity for fear, which is a feeling, towards a, first of all, another feeling. The best feeling in this case would be love. And then by changing the fear to love, at the same time, if you embrace the mind of God or spirit, then at that point you have got a formula for how to face darkness without fear in a theoretical sense. Remember, this part of the show, I'm talking in concepts and theories. We will be talking a lot more about practical issues, but I like to cover the theories because usually your minds are most fresh at this point. An hour from now, you may all be snoozing, so I don't know. And so I want to get you while you got, you know, you got enough to figure this whole thing out with me, together. Okay, so facing darkness without fear is having a state of mind that allows the state of mind of being spiritual first and changes fear into a kind of love. We're going to call this love unconditional and universal or universal, and doesn't have within it a personal connotation, either towards oneself, which would really not be love anyway, or personal in helping others to gain something, but for their own sake rather than for the sake of others. So I'm talking about a broader, much more soul-like love, and that's the ticket. That's the way to get to it. You might say, why is love so important? Well, because love is part of the astral nature of all of us, right? That's right. And it is the antithesis of the negative emotions. And fear is considered to be a negative emotion. Now, why is it negative? Isn't it okay to be afraid of things that might hurt you? Yeah, I mean, lots of people would say that. Isn't it all right to fear things that seem more powerful or that you have no seeming control over? Isn't it okay to have those sensations and feel that way? Well, the answer to this is a fairly straight, no, it's not okay. But the reason why it's not okay isn't what most people would think. It's perfectly okay to have feelings and to recognize them and feel. The reason it's not okay to have fear is because it has already then changed the more natural state and the state that finds God of being empathic and loving, it has chased that out. Fear is a over-concern with the susceptibility of harm from someone or something else. That's it. It's an over-concern. And you can say, well, how could it be over if someone's going to smash your head in, you know, because they think you're whatever. Why isn't that an appropriate response? Because if you're more loving, you have a much more conscious state. Your mental state is more spiritual, in other words, more consciousness. And if you're more creative and loving, you find a way around or to deal with the forces that are being imposed upon you. And those ways of dealing with those forces alleviates and literally obliterates the fear. Wow. I know I'm going kind of fast here. I want to get it all in before we go to break. But so you see, there's an actual rational side to this whole thing. I know it doesn't seem to most people that way when they're caught in this awful experience. They tell themselves, well, I heard that guy on the radio, Niles, whatever his name is, but, you know, he isn't here now, and here are these things coming down, and they're very terrible and everything else, and what the heck am I going to do? Sit here for an hour and try to figure this thing out, or maybe just run away, or get somebody else to help me run away, or protect me. So those, and I completely understand that. I mean, listen, I've been there. But the point is that what I'm saying is correct, even if it's very difficult at times from a human's perspective, from our perspective, to be able to do what will effectively eliminate the fear. And it isn't dependent upon whether or not you, quote-unquote, deserve bad things to happen to you. Everybody says, oh, it must be your karma. Or whether you believe that you deserve it or that. You can still deal with fear in the ways I'm proposing, because once you do, unless you have a belief that there must be guilt associated with anything you've ever done wrong, you have the opportunity for redemption from whatever past errors or mistakes you've done, which is considered part of God's thought in mind, and you have the absolute right to not only redeem yourself, but to be creative and loving in ways which adds to everybody else's overcoming their fears by being both an example and maybe a co-participant in dealing with the darkness that is causing the fear. Wow. Now, I know it's pretty fast, and some of this may still be a little loose in terms of trying to follow all of the different connections. Okay. But hopefully, if this makes some sense to you on a purely conceptual level, then when we move to some practical understanding, it'll be a lot easier to buy into and to grasp it. Because otherwise it starts sounding more like diatribes coming from the guy who tells you, oh, everything's going to be just wonderful. And with the second name Pollyanna, you know, I mean, that is not what I'm trying to sell at all. I'm trying to actually show that through self-actualization, one can overcome any darkness and do so without fear. Oh, that sounds, I mean, that's a, to me, that sounds like a great idea if you can get it, really. And it also means that the more people who can use the model that I'm suggesting tonight, the better off the whole world might be in case some of these terrible disasters, like, well, what happens if President Obama takes over the country by edict? And well, we all would look at that and say, well, there's no reason to be afraid. We would face the darkness, and we would do something about it. We would be creative, and we would be more conscious because we'd be more loving. I mean, we may not be loving towards the president if that were to be the case, I'm saying, but the point is that you would be in a position where ultimately the victory would be virtually guaranteed over the situation, not without some potential bad things. So let's move into that point. Well, okay, but another issue then is if a person were to follow this general approach, doesn't that leave them open towards more some type of reactive aggression or vindictiveness or hostility or who knows? That's going to be played out onto them. And the answer is yes, entirely possible. But then you have to overcome the ultimate of all fears. And what is that? The fear of death. You see, when you really boil down all fears that may come from darkness or otherwise, they are connected to the bottom line, which is our own fear of death, because if you truly, and I mean truly, are not afraid of death, there's nothing in life that you will ever be afraid of either. So I'm telling you that from a real bottom line scenario. Now, somebody say, well, didn't you say you might be afraid of darkness if most of the world was unaware of its existence? Yeah, because I'm not totally unafraid of death from the standpoint that if I leave this world without correcting some of the problems to the best of my abilities, and this planet goes really dark, I will take a significant amount of that responsibility. So my fear of death is leaving a world with so much darkness and without having been able to make some change. By my own standards, I don't believe I'm being judged for that specific factor, if at all, but certainly not for that. But nonetheless, that's where I come from. Now, that's a real strange position, and most people don't have it. And I'm not saying that everybody should. But being unafraid of death allows us to approach life in a totally different way. It virtually makes people invulnerable to the fears, especially the fears they generally have about almost anything. You see, once you know that you truly, in consciousness, are immortal, and that your body just simply changes form from one type of energy to another, and actually dimensionally from another dimension to another dimension, and that physics is actually changing, so it's hard to explain all this correctly. But nonetheless, the bottom line is that if you've gotten to that point, that's a huge asset. And it will allow most people, just having that one issue resolved, to live a life of fearlessness and of overwhelming success in facing darkness. Overwhelming. And even maybe proportionately greater success in facing evil. It virtually makes you into a super being. All right, so How do you do that? How do you become totally unafraid of death? Well, I'm going to put it in a nutshell, and then we're going to have to go back from there because people are going to go, huh? Here's how you do it in 30 seconds or less. You unify the senses, seven of them, the seven major senses, the seven major chakras, in each of the three human bodies, which are the etheric physical, the astral, and the monastic. Then you join those three bodies, senses, which have already been unified into one from seven, into one sense. And at the same time, you elevate your consciousness to be able to respond to all the information coming in from that one sense of everything in the three lower worlds at one time. And then you have a sense of true immortality of consciousness on a soul level. You'll become a living soul, or some people call them masters or whatever, and you no longer will fear any form of death forever. You're done. That's it. When you get to that point, there will never be a fear of death again. All right, well, there are a few conditions in there that most people are going to roll their eyes around and say, I knew he was going to say something like that. There's no way. Okay. But there are degrees. There are degrees. That's the ultimate. That's the way you're completely fear, completely fearless, and death has no meaning. But you're also living in all three of the dimensions of time and space at the same time. You're able to do things which are truly in the miraculous realm. And you can take the form in whatever realm you want and be in existence at that time there or elsewhere at the same time. You can literally be in multiple places at the same time. So the point here is that a person becomes super creative as well. That means that they become literally, we'll say, joined at the hip with their own creator, God. So they and God are really working together in a team-like fashion. And they know it and sense it at the same time, and they become an extension as an expression of God in the world around them. Okay, but some people aren't going to get there in the near future, right? Most. So how are they going to get to be living or facing darkness without fear? Well, the answer here is not as complicated as it may seem. It's proportional. And it's always up to your level of response anyway to a master or someone who's a liberated soul. And their level of response is quite high. So it's a daunting situation to be able to complete the process. But if you're down in a lower level and your levels of response are quite low relatively, then you can achieve some elements of the fear of death without having to complete the process because it seldom comes up. And therefore, you can live your life most of the time without having fear of death and being able to withstand darkness and, in many circumstances, evil. And that's the real big deal, that you can get there. You don't have to yet be a liberated soul. You don't have to be a master. But you probably are on your way. I mean, maybe within a few lifetimes you'll be there. But for right now, at this moment, you can escape by that. And you can still do a tremendous amount of creation, a tremendous amount of good, without necessarily, at least, being perfect, perfect in relative human sense. So this is the way that you can achieve this amazing result. And you can get there within months to years of time, not lifetimes. So this is also practical because I don't consider things that are 10 years or more out as really practical, especially when we're dealing with events as they are changing in this world today. We need something a little closer to the time we live in now to be able to have a grip on to make it useful. Okay, so hopefully this is coming together. We've got some kind of tangible, we'll say, practical way of facing darkness without fear. If you want to do it, you can. You can choose to be more spiritual by, sort of reiterating a little bit, more spiritual by joining together and using more of God's mind, which is creation and purpose and will and choices and on and on. It's all part of the first part of God's mind. Connected to consciousness and unconditional love and planning and being in numerous ways inclusive and understanding of conscious being. That's a big deal. That's a real big deal. And in terms of doing it without the fear, you use love, which is part of the astral system of sensation, to replace fear. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, one of the problems that people have is they generally want to either attack or avoid darkness, but they don't love the, we'll say, not so beautiful, sometimes quite ugly, but nonetheless redeemable side of those who are dark. And that's a very difficult process. Some people can do that with people who aren't very obnoxious, people who aren't very evil, people who they may not know very well. And then they have a great deal of trouble trying to do it with the others, which would be people they know quite well, and people that they have something invested with. People who have done specific things to harm others that they know or care about. I mean, there's a lot of factors to get into play here. But the ability to love does not mean that you just give to them. It means that you give them what they need to become loving themselves, and that's an okay thing. You just don't give them anything else that they may want or demand. Yeah. So I hope that fits together for you and makes some sense. And when we look at the whole big picture, most of the world is unusually afraid at this particular time. Not that it wasn't thousands of years ago, because it was scary. But what makes it scarier today is the speed at which darkness can move, the speed at which it can adapt and change, because it wasn't very adaptable or changeable until within the last 100 years. And the fact that it has now become a mental institution. Now, what do I mean by that? Darkness used to be mostly in the realm of astral issues. It affected how people felt, and it was by the encouragement through feelings that people were driven to do things that were themselves in lockstep with darkness. But the today problem with propaganda and the ability to put it on the airwaves 24/7 and the lack of objectivity of news reporting and the lack of responsibility of the same, as well as a kind of almost, we'll say, reward that they got by following a means which is not truthful or honest. The world no longer rewards truth or honesty. It tends to reward people who cheat and take and lie to harm others. And some people lie, they may not actually do any harm with it, but people who lie to harm, people who embellish or change or exaggerate or just invent things to be harmful for the just the sake of being harmful, because that's what they want to do. That's a very bad thing. And those are the things that today have become much more serious problems. And it leads to a society with nothing but grief and horrible circumstances. Yeah. So when we look at it from that particular standpoint, wow, there is a totally different, we'll say, yardstick in place today than there was any time in the past. And evil has made inroads into the mental body. 1,000 years ago, evil barely could function throughout most of the astral world. And it was pretty much confined to the fifth and lower subworlds, and even then, much more so to the sixth and seventh, But here's the point, that evil uses these, we'll say, weaknesses to move into a totally different direction. The astral world is a fairly easy place for evil to live in the lower realms. The mental world has always been an extremely difficult place, even in the lowest of the seven sub-worlds, the lowest place you can go to. And in the seven sub-world, people live there, but evil now has a lot of effect on them. And on the sixth as well. Wow. I want you to think about this. I want you to think about this from a really deep level. That the people who have the most amount of animus and the most amount of destructive intention are looking for an escape into the mental world, because while they exist in their own way, in the A sphere of the astral world and then elsewhere, the door that sphere is open, it's wide open, they seek to expand themselves not just more in power over the astral world, but to get to the minds in them. Because remember, by the definition of facing darkness, it's a state of mind. If they can get in your mind, if they can function and live in your mind, then they've got you really good. And that's what the advent has been of propaganda. Propaganda was fairly rare and rarely used until the 20th century. With the extent of mass media that was produced and the inventions and the propulsion of human minds into higher and higher levels, sometimes into more and more egotism, but still higher levels of thought, people became ripe for attacks from evil through mental propaganda. What is propaganda? Propaganda are a series of untruths that in and of themselves support one another, but collectively together are a lie. And so it's the continual. And since it's supportive, the more you have support internally from the propaganda, the more people believe it, because they think that that determines truth, which it does not. Right? It doesn't determine truth. So you end up with a system that is being promoted here on Earth, and that is aiming at destroying the world through this method, one single method of propaganda. So I want you to think about that. We will come back and talk a little bit more about some of these concepts, and then we'll get into some practical issues. And we will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. By the way, if some of you had a little trouble hearing or couldn't even get on to the telephone system to listen in, you know, instead of using your computer during the first 14 minutes or so or something like that of today's show, it was just a little mixed up, and that was taken care of. Don't get discouraged, and I hope if you did miss that part, you'll go back and you can re-listen to the show once it's up on the network. Okay, so let me continue on with this whole idea. Okay, facing darkness without fear. It's a state of mind. Because it's a state of mind, darkness, or evil, I should say, excuse me, evil decided some time ago, that its best chance for expanding its ability to affect the weakness of all of life, which is humans, would be to attack humans directly in the mental world by creating and promulgating for its evil use, okay, for the evil use, propaganda. Now, you can say, well, didn't propaganda kind of, I mean, even the Romans had some sort of, like, propaganda. It wouldn't work because it was mostly by one person telling another, or maybe one person speaking to 10 or 20 or 30. It wasn't sufficient in numbers. It was the advent, actually, of radio, which allowed it to grow so much. Now, nothing wrong with radio, by the way. Yeah, but the problem is that technology goes hand-in-hand, which is part of the third ray, hand-in-hand with consciousness and with creation or light. And if the dark side commandeers radio for its own evil purposes, and then it, of course, moves into television, movies, and everything else. It then achieves this power. And the power is literally could be measured by things like kilowatts and frequencies and the number of people who can simultaneously listen in or hear, bandwidth. These are all measures in power terms that convert to evil power, because evil uses power in place of consciousness. So when we talk about that, in a practical sense, it means, and I know this is going to confound a few people, but it means that literally it's like the power in your wall, in your outlet. It's like the power that's running my voice right now. It's all of these things are power. Everybody thinks that power is some kind of elusive concept. I'm talking about it many, many times, just as it's referred to in the textbooks on science. Power. They replace consciousness or the need for it, with power. And then they use that to gain control over others, and the others in particular are other human beings, because evil is a human condition, so that they can then instrument a number of interactions and activities that will destroy life, and particularly, in the long run, human life. So we have wars and things like that. And it's all based upon this concept of propaganda. And propaganda has to have this power of the Third Reich that comes from sources like the radio and uses part of the etheric part of the physical plane or electromagnetic frequencies to achieve its goals. It's extremely difficult to use propaganda when you do not have higher models of power. But some people refer to books and newspapers and like that, and of course we've had those pretty much since the, we'll say, 15th, 16th century. The printing press developed, and then soon after that you ended up with more possibilities of that. But the dissemination of thought through the written word and or through pictures, etc., after we developed the ability to make newspapers and books, etc., is still a very slow method, but it is powerful, and it can be used, and it started right then. It started with the advent of what is known as the fifth subrace of the fifth race, which is right at that particular time. And when that race just gets going, when it just got going in a real strong sense, so there was a bunch of seed races that started thousands and thousands of years before, but this is when it really started moving ahead fast, you know, like it's going to really grow fast. When that started coming in at that time, you end up with these technologies that just join hands sometimes with the dark side because they're looking for them. They need the technologies to gain power. Now today, of course, the biggest technology that evil is trying to gain power over is the World Wide Web. We call it the, I call it the Internet. But the point is that why is that such a big deal and how is it that they're going to gain power over it? And the reason it's such a big deal is because unlike the past technologies, which were predominantly one directional, that means like, oh, well, okay, I will turn on the radio and now I can listen. But I can't most of the time, in most radio circumstances, talk back unless I have a two-way radio, but most people don't have that. And there was no broadcast two-way radio back then. So ultimately, it was a one-directional. And you say, well, that seems like an advantage to evil because evil can just pipe in and you can't say nothing. Well, it sort of was in some respects, but it sort of isn't in others. So let me give you the examples. If you have two-way, it's great, provided that it's totally free access. In other words, anybody can two-way to anything and get any kind of challenge to information to determine whether or not it is a bunch of pack of lies or it is not only internally consistent, but externally can be challenged and found to be hold its own. That's a good thing. And that's what the Internet today allows some people to do. But it has a dark side. The dark side is that some people are trying to prevent that from happening. They're trying to make the Internet so they can control it and others like them, and they can limit the access in two directions. Yeah. You can see what I'm getting at. Now, that would be a great travesty, and the challenge to this is going to take about 10 to 13, 14 years before we know how it's going to turn out. Right now, everybody says, oh, well, it'll never happen. Well, let me tell you, it can all happen in a year or less. And there are some countries where it already has happened. You may live in one of them. You may, by some miracle, be hearing me. And those countries do it all the time. But most countries don't. So the internet could turn into a very, very bad thing, or it could remain a way that evil will not succeed. But we will see. Can there be propaganda over the internet? Sure. But remember, if it's two-way, you can always challenge it, and it has a nullifying effect on it. But propaganda over news agencies and over other sources that people have relied upon for information, now that's a different story. That's very successful, and it has moved into every quarter, every country. It's a serious problem. Yeah. We didn't get rid of propaganda because we got rid of the Third Reich and, Goebbels and crazy propagandists. They were just the early forefathers of the real evil ones. Yeah. They may have invented some methods and actually borrowed the rest from the progressives and some socialists from the 19th century leading into the beginning of the 20th. Most people don't know that, but that's the truth. They actually invented some of the methods even before the technologies were fully available. All right. So today we have a challenge, and the challenge is the following. How do we thwart this evil and other kinds of evil as well? There's still astral evils, which are pretty severe too. But how do we thwart the evil from taking over this world? And the first of those ways that I can think of is to see evil and to face darkness without fear. Then evil's got no shot. I don't care what it does on the internet or otherwise. Not going to make it. Not going to make it. Now, I want to go into some examples in everyday life that people can do, because these examples are easier for some people to understand. They may be much more often that they appear. And they're not nearly as evil as some of the big things that we may talk about later in the show and have already discussed. Okay, so let's talk about some of these things. Let me go into some of them. All right. First of all, when we're dealing with the most common kinds of darkness, it usually involves people's, we'll call it fixed desires. Some people call them glamours. People have a lot of those, sometimes thousands. Yeah. And they compete for our attention. You go from one to another to another to another. And they're addictive. As a matter of fact, the very concept of addiction comes from these fixed desires, constantly pushing on us, wanting more and more of something that we find pleasurable, we like, makes us more important to ourselves and to others. These are the kinds of things that seductively bring people in an astral sense closer to the dark side, closer to the darkness within them. And when they are acting upon us, we cannot effectively love. We also lose our sense of empathy. Now, there's a structural reason for that. I'm not going to go into that. That's like a whole show to explain how these things work. But I think the bottom line point, the really biggie, is that when people are affected by some of these glamours, they become, let's say, complacent to their fear of them not being met. All right, so you've got some desires. I don't care what they are. We'll make up some examples. Let's say you have a desire for a new car. Very simple thing. Many people have those desires, right? And your desire for a new car becomes a glamour. Now, how does that happen? Well, you constantly make choices in your life based upon your feelings about having or not having a new car. And every time you make a choice that is because you want to have a new car, the desire to have the car becomes greater. Because you're just putting energy into it. And it's a thing inside you, asteroid. That's what it is. The desire is the thing. And it grows, and it grows, and it grows. And it can take months or even years, possibly. But most people, new cars will probably be in days, weeks, months, and years. Okay. So you've got a desire. But if desires grow and they are not yet met, then people develop fear that they will not be met. Because they believe that the desire is a form of, we'll call it pleasure, and will make them feel better, and also an improvement in their position security-wise for various reasons, which is complicated, and I won't get too much into that. And then the bottom line is that if they don't get the desire met within a time period that they believe is important, they begin to fear that in ways they are being harmed. Yeah. Well, I'm being harmed because I don't have a new car. Now, this sounds bizarre, right? I mean, how many people say, well, that doesn't make much sense. And we're all victims of doing this to ourselves all the time. Almost everybody does this, all human beings. And then we don't want to admit that it's an internal fantasy that is causing our fear. So we attribute it to others. Others that we may think are like parental figures or our superiors at work or something, whatever it is, you know. And it's so goofy because it just cuts off our ability to focus the same energies that are going into these desires into giving to others love in ways so they can become more giving, so we all can benefit from an improved world. Wow. So, the astral component in this is pretty serious. And it was the main component of how evil worked before propaganda. It did. It worked on these desires. Now, sometimes the desires are for certain sexual partners or sexual people, or sometimes the desires get into more things that are not as material as a car. It could be, well, gee, I desire to have everybody look up to me as being something special. You know, I am a special person. Sometimes the desires are very, very confused. They can be a lot of different things. But the more a person has of them, the less they have of an astral sense, which allows them to be empathic, so they lose that, and then they don't have empathy. And they instead have split astral senses and a lot of fear. Now, they may also have anger. Where does anger come from? Well, anger is a frustration of a desire not being met. You know, in my lifetime at the present, or not the present, but I would say if we go back many years ago, my greatest cause of anger was in people not growing in a loving sense. Tell me, that's a contradiction in terms. And so, obviously, I was wrong. But the point is that anything can trigger that in a person. Because, you know, you can get angry at almost anything, about almost anything, if your desire is for something different than what is happening at the moment. So anger is the opposite of fear. It causes you to want to irrationally approach something in a way in which usually some dominance or force is used. And yet it doesn't achieve its goals in any sense of the word. It just increases, in the long run, fear of death, but it also increases one's darkness and not being able to face darkness until you get over that. And I still have issues with anger, believe me. The thing that is interesting, though, is most of those that used to be more about people has to do with evil as a thing, you know, like a, it must be was like, it's used the cloud of evil coming up. But, yeah, it's more in this abstract mode, I would say, today in my life. Of course, I'm 64 years old. In the time that I've been here, I've learned a few tricks about dealing with myself, anyway, and improving the way that anger is used. But the most important thing is that fear has almost a direct attachment to any anger. When someone says to really, I want to change this by approaching it and doing something, it's because underlying that, they're afraid that if they don't do it with force or some kind of needed impetus, it won't happen. So they have a fear of that. So they don't take the more rational, calm approach. You see what I'm saying? Well, evil plays on all of that, by the way. And it has used that for ages and ages. But now the propaganda thing has become really replacing that. Because most people are onto the game of evil when it's doing the other thing, when it's doing the emotional business. We all can see that these days. We have a really good sense of it. Because we've been around enough times in enough lifetimes, we've seen evil do this sort of thing. The propaganda, especially when done on a mass scale, is new. And we don't have wisdom about it. And so we do develop fear from it, and sometimes anger from it. And it's done on a mass scale. Nothing can be more obvious than if you watched last year, various countries like Greece and Spain and somewhat a few years before in France and so, and England, all these countries which have followed socialist doctrines, people have become irrationally angry at their government because they're victims of what? Yes, propaganda. Yeah. By who? Dark and sometimes just blatantly evil people. Yeah. And sometimes they're the leaders of the countries or they're in some leadership position. It's a terrible thing. So we can see how that has gone that route. And then many people are afraid. I would say anyone who has been in the last few years angry has underlying a considerable level of fear. Okay. So there are some practical issues about the emotional side and getting over it. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the car thing again. If you really want to and need and think you should, whatever, new car, then you use some tests on that desire and see if the desire is a fixed desire or not. Say, well, I think I got to have a new car, and I've been thinking about it for about 3 months now, and tomorrow I'm going to go buy one. Okay. Well, unless it's a very, very good reason to go buy one, like, well, I don't have any more transportation. My other car was stolen or it's in an accident. Let's just say you don't have a real good reason. And that being the case, here's one challenge. Say, gee, you know what? Maybe this is a glamour I've got. So what I'm going to do is for the next 90 days, next 3 months, I'm not going to even think about, but I'm certainly not going to go buy a new car. Now you could say, well, that's just, you just hold yourself back, then you're going to want it even more 3 months from now. If it's a glamour, and you try to deal with the energy and the glamour by changing it into love, which is what I'm going to explain next, then it will go away within the 3 months. And if it isn't, it may remain, because then you will maybe discover the real reasons you desire it. But anyway, why does love get into the picture? Well, once you delay it, you give yourself 3 months to use some of that energy to give to others. It might even involve the very money you were going to use to buy the car with, but whatever it does, it involves a lot of the energy. And that is the purpose of testing yourself. Because you don't want these glamours controlling you. And believe me, once you buy a new car, that's not going to be enough. Maybe you're going to want a better one. Another 6 months or a year. Who knows? And you want five of them. I don't know if you can drive them all at once, but you know what the heck. There was a time when I had a lot of cars. I couldn't drive them. Not all at the same time anyway, but I like having them. How come? Well, in my case, I liked different zooped-up kinds of cars, and then some of them I got to impress other people, and some of them I got to impress myself, and some of them I got because I just like the fun of feeling the acceleration and other stuff about them. But, you know, the funny thing about all that was that when I finally let them all go, it didn't have that much effect on me. Not like I thought it might have. All right, so let's get back to the question of love. As long as you convert any fixed desire into love, the desire will eventually diminish and go away. That's the solution to that problem. If it is being used with some form of mental propaganda, or worse, possession, on your mental body, you can break that apart by being both more loving, which will raise your consciousness, and at the same time, you'll become more thoughtful. You will no longer have a lack of wisdom in your thinking, and your mind will become clearer and clearer and more able to create. Creation is an excellent measure of this whole process. If you find that your creativity is confused, lacking, maybe zealous, but in the wrong way, constantly making terrible mistakes with it, then that's a bad sign. That shows that you got some problems. And it usually comes from the things I just said. Some of you heard the word possession. Of course, I've talked about this many times. Possession does not necessarily mean that you know, some being is taken over and they speak to others with their voice like this, and I don't agree. No, that may be a form, and is sometimes in rare circumstances, of possession. Most of the time, possessed people are only partially possessed, but that's enough, by dark entities. Huh. Are they human? Well, kind of. I mean, they're associated with humans. They have human qualities, and they came from the human kingdom. But at this point, they have lost a lot of their humanity because they lack so much consciousness. But they seek to possess others because they can't, they don't exist in this physical world. They exist in the lower astral world. And they want to gain some physical sense while at the same time they do their evil things. So they're just looking for folks that'll do that with them, for them. And the more you work towards a positive goal and try to do good things, if you challenge evil, the more it will try to possess you or others around you. Because if it can do that, it's like short circuits the whole problem it has with you. So much rather possess you than convince you or to, in some circumstances, fight you. Why not possess you if you can? It's a much easier route. That's easy to do with everybody. With some people, it's easy. And, of course, they'll take whatever opportunities they can. Whatever. All right. So let me give you all a break for about a minute or two here. I just want to tell you about some things. First, if you, again, haven't heard about Phi Chi Jizik, I'm going to let you know that you should give it a try if you have pains. Now, somebody I know pretty close with has trouble taking a lot of pills. It's always a problem because a lot of substances that they may need to take are available by pill and maybe not by other means. Jizik is available in tablets. And for the most part, most people don't have too hard of a time taking them, but they're fairly big. But for people who have internal issues, like some kind of rawness or irritation in their esophagus or stomach, maybe their intestines, that could be a problem for them. I mean, because almost anything they intake, if it isn't mild, may cause them to be upset. And Jizik has some herbs which are spicy in them. But usually most people don't even notice it. It goes in their stomach and boop, gone. But if you're highly sensitive, it can be a problem. Now, we've experimented. I mean, actually, you could use G-Zip under certain circumstances. As I, I don't want to be polite about this, but you can use it as an enema. And it will actually get in your system just as effectively under certain circumstances. Of course, the question is, how much can you put into an enema bag and how much can you get in? It has to be pretty diligent, but you could do it. And it actually could be effective. It's not something you do every day, though. It might be just something if you had a really bad headache or if you had some other injury or problem. It might be something you would try if you couldn't swallow a few times to achieve results. But in general, this is something you do swallow. And right now they're on sale for $30 a bottle, which isn't bad. It's actually quite good. And it's a way to have a natural means of relieving most kinds of pain for most people. It doesn't work on everybody. It works least on people who smoke and or use drugs. And when I say use drugs, I'm not saying you take a drug that's a prescription and you only use it occasionally from a doctor or something that isn't a narcotic. But if you're addicted, whether it's prescribed for you or not, to a strong drug like a narcotic or any other kind of illegal drugs, it's not going to do much good for you to take G-Zip. You can try it. It probably won't hurt you. In fact, I almost certainly won't. But just how good it's going to be for you, well, it's hard to say. And the reason for this is that in natural medicine, natural kinds of medicines, you don't have the same kind of force that's involved. And so when people take supplements, we call them herbal supplements, the forces are very low that the supplements use in comparison to prescription drugs or to illicit drugs. And those forces prevent the natural substances from doing their job. They're overrun, overpowered. And so that's where the problem comes in. At any rate, I hope that makes some sense to you. You can get G-Zip at buygzik.com, and I'm going to look it up here. There's a phone number somewhere on my desk, I think. Here it is. You can call this phone number, 602-431-5762. 602-431-5762. Or you can go to buygzik.com. Buygzik.com. The name again of the product is Phi Chi, spelled Q-I, P-H-Y-Q-I, Jesus, G-E-S-I-C. Okay, so let's move ahead. Okay, so we're talking about love kind of quelling some of the astral issues that come into play about darkness, and how the dark side has really gotten a tremendous boost with getting us more afraid by affecting us on a mental scale. Now, when you get mentally possessed or you just mentally allowing yourself to not think right and to think along the side of darkness, when you get into that sphere, you're in a dangerous place. Because any desire you have in your astral body could be easily joined with some part of the, we'll say, illusionary nature in your mental body, which isn't thinking in terms of wisdom, but it's thinking in terms of egotism and selfishness. And then you have a powerful tool that the dark side can use, and that can generate a lot of fear in the astral body, coming from this thing called Kama Manasic thinking. People get much more fearful from that kind of result. Okay, so let's move on to some other practical issues. Some people are afraid of being alone. left alone, not for minutes or hours, but alone in, over life in general. Now, their fear of being alone is usually associated with the fear of being close to others, in that sense. And it's a kind of complex thing. Once people develop the fear of being alone, which also has attached to it the fear of being together with others in a very close way, they are headed in a direction in which darkness has the higher or upper hand. Now, why is that? Well, and this is a good reason why I think people should relish and try to stay in monogamous relationships or stay in close friendships with anybody that they're close with. The bottom line is that human beings don't do as well when they are alone. Now, why is that? When I say alone, I'm not talking about alone versus being around people. I'm talking about alone being close with other people. They don't do so well because at the present time we need an awful lot of feedback in a mental sense to quell our egotism. And in the astral sense, we need a lot of unconditional love. Neither one of those are required or needed in relationships, distant relationships with people. Only when you get close do those things seem to matter. So the challenge to our life about people and being close to people is best met by having relationships with people. And some of them can be intimate, some of them may not be, or whatever the situation may be, that allows us to challenge ourselves both astrally in terms of wisdom and in terms of love and givingness and empathy, and then again in terms of our mental state of being not egotistical, open-minded, wise. Wise is a good one. And so this is another way, a method that we can improve ourselves, is to not live our lives alone or isolated from others, both astrally and mentally. Notice I'm not mentioning physically. You can live around people in a physical sense and still be very isolated from them mentally and astrally. And when you don't do that, if let's say that you continue down a road of continued loneliness, continued isolation, you might not even feel the loneliness, but the result will be an increase in the irrational state of fear. You will become more and more afraid. You will lose the state of what I call gregariousness. You'll become withdrawn. That's a natural path that people go down. It's not a good one, but it's a natural one. When they choose to isolate themselves from others, to not be emotionally close with others, and to be, besides emotionally withdrawn, to be intellectually vacant, virtually, because then they don't get challenged about their own thoughts. They become more and more egotistical until they start becoming connecting the two with love and become arrogant. So people who are arrogant are mostly not close to anyone, either on an emotional or mental level. Even if they are married, that would be a true statement. And people who are not arrogant, who are open-minded and gregarious in an emotional sense and empathic, they almost inevitably have close relationships with quite a few people. Wow. Think about what I'm saying, because these are very general statements which could easily be determined in truth by your own observations. You don't have to believe me. All they do is give you clues to see whether I'm right or not. Right? And maybe I am. And if I am, then it's important to learn them because the It's the fundamental foundation of where fear grows from. So people who are gregarious will be less afraid when facing darkness. And people who isolate themselves and generally are withdrawn from others, even though they may look around them or whatever, they have increased fear, especially when facing darkness. Okay. Whoa. Okay. Some other practical issues to consider about facing darkness without fear. I talked about this a number of weeks ago. It's actually worthwhile to think about your own death, to recognize that your life as a physical entity in the physical world is limited by a relatively short period of time, and that you're going to transition from the physical body into the astral body when your consciousness becomes affixed into the astral body and your senses become fully awake. That means that your feelings will become much more intense because they're fully awakened, but your sense of physical things will almost totally disappear. And your ability to exist in the physical world will also go away. So you won't be here. You can have more access to and awareness of the physical world at times because your senses astrally are so strong that can actually sense some things here because dimensionally you're not that far away. But the problem is that you truly on a truly physical sense, lose those senses, you lose the physical body. And you must have a body to have senses in it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what does that mean? What does that mean to think about your own death, as I've talked about in prior shows, and to come up with some thoughts and, we'll say, a state of mind that gets you rid of fear? Well, the state of mind you need to be in is to recognize that at the time of your transition from the physical to the astral dimension, and later on, much later, from the astral to the manasic or mental dimension, at the time that you do that, you gain freedom and grace of God. You become more conscious. You lose a good deal of fear, and you become, in many respects, a more spiritual person. That's all relative, though, because there's some really nasty people who die who don't seem to have any of those qualities. I just said more. I didn't say how much more and relative to what. So that's what happens in general. And evil does not change. All right. Let's get back to that subject. Evil people, or people who are near evil, do not change from the physical world existence, if they are physically alive, and the astral, they just stay the same. Now, how is it they don't change? What is it, you know, because the rest of us do. We gain in consciousness, because evil people don't want consciousness. They don't care. They don't want to become more loving. They want to become more powerful. And to them, losing some contact with the physical world does not increase their power. It makes it more difficult for them to gain more power over others, actually. So they're kind of keen to liking to stay physically alive if they can. But most importantly, they don't believe that they will die because they believe they can remain alive as long as they can take more and more power from as many people as they can. So that's what their system is. Their belief system and their way of living their life is to gain more and more power. And they don't want to lose consciousness, but they don't care if they become more conscious. And at the same time, they want to be creative, but only in destructive ways to life and their creator. If that doesn't sound strange, yeah. Now, there's a lot of logical reasons why that doesn't all work, but I'm not even going to get into them because it's so ridiculous. But the bottom point of this is, that evil people have virtually no grace, and they end up with a situation in which there's no change. Now, some people say, well, I don't like change, so maybe I should be evil. But change is required in order to be part of God's thinking, because the first part of change, well, part of change is being creative. And if you're going to be creative, you're going to have change. And so it comes from the light of God, and there's no way around it. If you want a changeless existence, you'll have a non-God existence. Wow. Okay. So, practically, you don't want to try to have more power over other people. You don't want to try to gain things by the destruction of others. You don't want to be punitive. I have trouble with this one. And want to get back at others who are doing terrible things. Not so much to you, maybe, but to people you care about and love. And maybe just to anybody, because you may care about and love just everybody in some ways. So here's where the bottom line gets into. If you're going again, going to again, face darkness without fear, and you're coming to the end of your life, the people who are most afraid are evil. They really are. But they convert their evil into a compulsion for more and more power. As long as they get the power in some ways, they don't sense or feel the fear. They are, but they don't feel it. And those who move on to the next dimensions and are open to death as a means of change and creation become highly creative as they move into these other areas of life. And in so doing, they move closer to being their soul. They may eventually go to be their soul, but it takes time to get there. And they have much more capability to be wise and to exercise that, and more likelihood to be loving and helpful towards others most of the time. So that's where they're headed, by and large. By and large. Okay. Then, do they have less fear? Yes. Because as they gain an understanding, consciousness, about the process of life and death and the process of moving over, they realize that it is correct. Particularly if they've observed people dying, it may help them. Because if you're around people who are dying, sometimes they, even if they haven't embraced the idea beforehand, they actually have the experience I'm talking about, and people can witness them going through it. And you know, it's pretty neat. Some people have died and come back because they didn't become permanently affixed in the astral world. They may have gotten there, but only for a brief time. And most of them don't go to the astral world. They just are etherically just present. But they stay in the physical world, but they can't be seen, and they're usually floating around in the ceiling in a corner somewhere. The point is that they can hear, to some extent, what's going on. They can see what's going on. And their awareness is still there because they still have their etheric or electromagnetic senses, but their physical ones are in their body, which they're now detached from. They may even watch themselves physically die and then still come back into that body and move back. That's pretty convincing when people have that. The most convinced people are people who have out-of-body experiences that they themselves control. I've been down that road. Yeah, there's no question that if you spend a few years of time, not the same as a year here, but still a lot of time, in the astral world, it'll change you. Because you're going to know where you're going and what it's like and et cetera. You may not know the exact sub-world you're going to visit, but you're going to be close because your consciousness brings you to that place right from the get-go. You can improve your consciousness and improve the world, sub-world you may live in eventually. But still, the fear of facing darkness. What can darkness do to you outside of completely destroying your ability to be physically alive. It can't destroy your consciousness. Only you can do that to yourself. So you have an amazing ability here to find a way of facing darkness without fear, a way of facing death without fear. No matter what I say, and no matter what I have said so far, the majority of people are still afraid of death. Now, why is that? Because there's a thing called illusion. Our own glamours and desires, our maya in our etheric body, which has to do with an uncooperative nature and a laziness on many people's parts. And then, plus eating and drinking poison, not too good for us either. And then finally, in the mental sense, we have egotism and arrogance hand in hand, convincing us that we're right and other people are wrong and we know more than anybody else, etc. All that is happening, and it is affecting who we are. And we can overcome all of those things by becoming accustomed to the idea of death, as I had suggested a few weeks ago, thinking about it. Oh, I'm going to die this way, I'm going to go that way. What's it going to be like? How am I going to deal with the world, with this world, that's right, semi-leave, and when I'm fully gone, it really helps. Because then you realize, I can be a creative part of this process, and it's really not all that terrible. If there's anything that's terrible, it's probably living in the physical world as it is right now. Very difficult place to live as we know it today. Let's face it. This place is tough. And I want to talk about that now. I want to talk about where we're moving into and why it's so important that we overcome facing darkness without fear. The world is going to become uglier by the day. Why? Well, because there's a raging civilization is taking it on the chin. The third ray is connected to all civilization. And darkness lives through chaos in the third ray. That's what it uses. That's how it's big deal is. And chaos is seemingly going to hit us a number of different ways. Right now. This year. Right now. I just hope we can get through this year without any terrible things happening. But I think that some are going to happen. I've already told you I think that the state of Israel is going to be put into the device it is in, and we will not help them, and we will instead try to force them to do nothing, and instead, in an act of self-preservation, they will preemptively strike against Iran. Yes. When they do that, that will set into motion all kinds of other things. $6 to $9 prices per gallon of gas likely occur within months. In addition, expenditures of the United States will increase rather than decrease and bring us closer to a paper society by the end of the year, possibly. And further, we're dealing with people being unable to communicate well together, which also may lead to more potential for war, but it also has to do with everyday activities. People are getting frustrated. They find it very difficult to get other people to understand what they're saying or vice versa. This is all an effect of the crystallization of the throat chakra, especially in the etheric physical body. And people aren't communicating well together, not as well as they were 10 years ago. Not that it was a panacea, but it was a lot better. I can see the changes. That doesn't mean that there's some kind of bulldozer that's going to roll over us and we can't deny it, etc. You can go into a complete denial about it and say, oh, it's just this or that happening. Some natural occurrence happened over a season. If you want to believe that, that's fine. Except there's a lot of evidence that supports the opposite. So either way, you can you can do fine with either, you know, if you want. The thing about it is that we are facing the potential for a really serious breakdown in society. Now, breakdown, I mean, there may not be goods and services that we need. Not that we just desire, but that we really need. There may not be the kinds of things we used to. The internet may go down temporarily or may go down permanently. It may become taken over by our government or some other government. There are some strange things happening. There's no question about that. And as each day goes by, there's more and more of these issues. Although I think Israel attacking Iran is probably going to be a big deal, maybe a serious deal that may lead to some much worse crises. If that does occur, let me just go through that. I've said some of them before. You can expect food prices to go crazy because there won't be much oil, not enough to carry all the food to faraway markets. Almost all food production will be within 50 to 100 miles of where you live. If they don't grow that kind of food that you want to eat there, or if you can't buy it ready-made or pre-made or in cans or wherever you do normally, you're just going to have to go without. That's what will happen. That's just the very beginning. Very strange thing. It's just the very beginning. And food, without food, people start getting real antsy about other things, but as food diminishes for people who have poor nutrition and health issues, they become open to worse diseases which may cause a plague. So lack of food and hunger and starvation lead to a plague. And then in addition, we will see the radicalization of some governments, including here in the United States. Going back to the beginning of the show, it's even possible that because of the crystallization of the Third Reich, a leader may choose, even if they didn't think about doing it beforehand, very dark and long way of attempting leadership. I know it sounds crazy, but it could happen. And even if that person wouldn't normally do it, they might do it under these circumstances. Wow. That's kind of scary, isn't it? And you think about it in these terms. And like I said at the beginning of the show, okay, if you're really fearless, if you can get to that state, and those sorts of things happen, you'll be creative and resourceful. You'll work better together with others because you'll have both creativity and purpose and will joined together with inclusiveness and consciousness and the willingness to give to those that you think should be given to on a wise basis. And you may support a system that is the antithesis of the government being taken over by a tyrant. And from that point, you'll make decisions that have nothing to do with running away. Nor do they have to do with anger. They'll be rational decisions based upon God. Who and what does God want to be as the institution of both the government for this country, if not for many others? Now, a lot of people say, well, God's got nothing to do with it. A bunch of people, 51 of them, whatever, got together and decided, well, we would all have a constitution like this and whatever. It doesn't matter anymore. The President of the United States said that the Constitution is irrelevant because it's no longer applicable and he'll make all the decisions for us. I end that part myself. So, in actuality, you look at it from that standpoint and you say to yourself, gee, I'm not going to be afraid anymore because this is a challenge. I don't like the fact that darkness has moved so close and is doing so bad, so much bad, but it's incumbent upon me to do something about it. I don't have to act out in anger, but I can act out with purpose and creation, and I can achieve goals that may be harmful to some people who are evil. At the same time, it may be liberating and prosperous, and it may be freedom to, and make freedom for all others, not just the population in this particular country, but it will have an effect everywhere. So you see, we're in a position now where we really could make a decision that would make a difference. And we really can face darkness without fear. Wow. I consider that really as good a lesson in tonight's show as probably anything I said. Okay, some other practical sides to this. Children, what should we do with our children in the present situation? Well, I've said something like this before, but I'll say it more clearly. That children need to face their fear of darkness as well, and they need to face the state of what we'll call physical death. I don't believe that it's good to allow children to grow up without them having experience with people dying, having experience with what, and discussion about what death is. And I think it's just as important, if not more so, than having a discussion with them about their sexuality and what kind of sexual behaviors they're going to do. As a matter of fact, many times more important, I think. And putting it all together, maybe by listening to a show like this, or by talking about some of the side issues that we really haven't had time to go into tonight's show, allowing them to express themselves and at the same time get over a huge fear. And you can say, well, my kid never even talks about that. She's only 9 years old. Well, because people don't talk about things doesn't mean they're not in denial. It doesn't mean that they aren't conscious of it. They may have less awareness and consciousness of death than someone who's 64 or 80, but they can and do have levels. And when they are not told the truth, they will eventually find out the opposite. So you do exactly want to tell them the truth. You want to help them to become fearless, but not in an obnoxious way where they're going to go be aggressive, where their fear turns to anger, but in a loving way, where they become fearless enough in life to be great creators, and at the same time to embrace God, to embrace other human beings as a resource and an important part of life, but at the same time recognizing that some human beings have and make the choice become dark and or evil. This is the kind of message I think that children will respond to. And when they do, they may continue to discuss it on occasion. They may be very open, more so than adults, to discussing. And once a child overcomes death, it becomes super creative just like everybody else. So if you want your children to exceed, to excel, and to be great in whatever they're going to do, facing darkness without fear will be a tremendous, tremendous asset. And if they totally become unafraid of death, they will be so far ahead of their contemporaries and so amazing in their thought process that it will be a great, unique experience. For you, as parents, or if they are less closely related to you, it's the same thing. Eventually, you can look at all children as being part of God, and therefore having some attentive rights from you, from all of us. Because we can't say, well, that's my child, and I don't care about anybody else's. You don't want to do that because with that sense of hypocrisy, you'll alienate your children and alienate yourself from being a, we'll say, detached capable of facing any form of darkness. Wow. Okay. And finally, let's talk about the last thing we'll probably be able to get to tonight. And that is the big picture. If we're going to succeed as a planet, we've got to stop evil in a very short time. We don't have probably much more than the remainder of this century to do that. Evil could go on for a century or two longer than that, I think, if it takes over in a century. But it will do so by stripping and destroying what remains. And the planet will just stop to exist, cease to exist. Life will be unsupportable in this world. All right, so we've got a very short fuse, we've got a very short time. And if you're from the United States and listening to me, the United States is supposed to be the lead country in this. Right now we're not leading anybody, but that can change and should. And the way we can lead, and in the big picture as being a leading country, if that's where you live right now, is to be a model to the rest of the world of fearlessness and willingness to create solutions that evil cannot easily walk over. And a willingness to rid ourselves of anyone that we believe to be dark, and especially anyone we believe to be evil, that we have incorrectly put into either office or some form of control or authority. We need to get rid of those folks, because that's all they want is that. And they will use it to be destructive to life and to God. That's what they're going to use it for. They're already doing it. Get rid of corruption. It's time that we face the fact that the human race, by and large, is corrupt, and governments are part of the most corrupt part of the human race. Corruption is really the reversal of God's mind and God's thoughts. Some people call it God's laws. It's the reversal of those things, for the most part. And the desire, again, to grow in some ways from away from and outside of God. If you find yourself in that vein of thinking, be highly attuned and diligent to making a change and preventing it from going any further. Drive it out of everybody you know by challenging them about it. And discuss it about those you don't know but you know of, who are in authority or have power to do destructive acts, so that other people can see them and awaken and know what's happening. Because once you have the sense or awareness there is darkness and or evil, then you can do something about it. If you don't have it, you flounder, and you could be easily misled into another direction, a baloney. Because that's what the dark side usually does. Yes, baloney, which all includes, of course, the propaganda and the glamours and all the other issues and the desire for things instead of for relationships and love and caring. Let other people know about this show, not just tonight's show, although certainly tonight's, I think, an interesting one, but let them know about shows like this and about the books I write and other people have written about Ageless Wisdom, and talk about these ideas and thoughts. Discuss with other people what they think of death, whether they're afraid of death. Getting people to talk about it is the first step to getting them over it. So don't be afraid to talk about it. Everybody says, well, we can't talk about death because that person over there is dying. Well, when are you going to talk to them about it? When they're not here anymore? That's not going to work. No. Time to talk about to people about death is whenever you want to have a discussion about it with them. and whenever they want to do it with you. I usually entertain people by talking about death right off the bat, and they say, well, I want to know about that. Yeah, tell me what you got to say about it. And they usually want to read what I wrote because it usually involves that subject. It's not the whole thing, because I wrote a whole ton of stuff about things. But the thing is that that's intriguing. People do want to talk about that. They want to know people who know something about it because they think nobody does. And they want to feel closer to others because, remember, in isolation, they're open to being victims of their glamours and being victims of their arrogance, their egotism, their own minds, and being victims of loneliness and isolation. And that makes them open to becoming victims of darkness and evil. Remember that. People who are those ways aren't by accident dark. It's a direct consequence. It comes directly from it, and it brings you to its logical end. So this is the answers that I hope people are looking for, or these are the answers, I should say, to how to face darkness and how to live without fear and how to eventually overcome the evil that may overcome all of us and destroy this whole world. Earth is a very, very valuable place because the experiments that are going on here are taking place almost no place else. Without us being victorious over evil here, many, many, many countless planets will face it without the wisdom we could have developed and shared with them over time. That gift to all goes way beyond Earth, and realize that each one of us as souls came here to provide this gift to the universe. Let's not lose it. Let's stand our ground, not be afraid, and let's win this one. Because I don't want to go to another planet remembering what went on here and realizing we didn't finish, we didn't get to where we needed to go. And as I said, of all the fears that I once had, that may be the only one that still remains. So maybe together we can help me and all of you overcome that fear. And we can all stand together as one against this great darkness that we have literally descending on us at this point. Okay, well, I hope this show has made some sense to y'all. And do tell other people to listen to it. If you know someone that couldn't get on the phone line during the first 14 minutes, mention to them, oh, the show went on. They may not have gotten to a computer. May not have kept calling back. So let them know that it still is available. And I hope that by next week we'll all be in a better place in terms of facing darkness without fear. And until next week, this has been Niles McFarlane for Why Life Is. Thank you.